Welcome to the Road Rage. We are back. JR wants us to go over the Raiders draft grade. I'll pull up your draft. I don't have the grades in front of me right now. We needed to get to some of those other grades, but I'll pull up. Let's see if I can pull up by team. Yes. Okay. It might take me a second to scroll down to your Raiders. Raiders. Where are you? Oops, I passed it. I went too fast, Ramona. I was flying. I was speeding, Ramona. I was going 100 and what was Richardson going? 104. I was going 104.
Yeah, 104.
Yeah, 104. Okay. Fernando Mendoza was the first pick, obviously. An absolute necessity, no choice, had to make that pick. So, Trayden Stukes at 38, the safety out of Arizona, a little bit of a reach, but I love Stukes. He's a ball hawk. I mean, a little reach in terms of the area the Raiders picked him. I mean, I think I had him like 50 or something on my board, but I'm fine with that. Kimron Crawford, the edge for Auburn, went at 67. I think that's about where I had him. I think that's a good pick. The sort of the other Auburn defensive end. As we approach the draft, Crawford got more and more love, and I figured he was going to be a top 100 player, so I think it's a good pick. Trey Zun, the third, the interior offensive lineman for Texas A&M, he's played everywhere along the offensive line, so he gives you some positional versatility on that O-line. The Raiders obviously made some offseason moves to enhance that line, which is the biggest thing they need to do, so continuing to work on it, I think, is key. They came back with pick 101 and drafted Jerod McCoy. Jerod McCoy, the cornerback out of Tennessee that was, I think, from a talent standpoint, was probably the most talented cornerback in the draft, but obviously NFL teams red flagged him. He fell all the way into round four, where the traits guys go. So his knee is viewed as degenerative. That's what they're saying. That's what teams around the league believe. We've seen some situations like this before. They generally don't work out for the teams that pick him because, generally the National Football League is not going to get medical deals wrong. But the Raiders seem to think otherwise. Look, I've heard this suggestion, and I'm willing to buy this. If the Raiders get four quality years out of him, is it worth the pick at 101? Yes, it is. So I'm fine with that pick at 101. Even if you think there's a better than 50-50 chance this guy's never playing for you, you know, I think you take that chance at pick 101. They came back with 122 and got Mike Washington, a running back that many thought would be in the top 100. I thought so. He tested incredibly well. That's a good pick. The cornerback out of California, Masses, Hezekiah Masses, I think that's a pretty good pick in round five. And then I really like to pick a Malik Benson, the wide receiver of Oregon. Benson has juice, and I like that pick as a six-round pick. We have not gotten to my sort of steals of the draft yet. We have to get to that, too. And then finally, you took Brandon Cleveland, defensive tackle out of NC State, with the 229th pick. So, all told, a pretty good draft. JR, I think a pretty solid draft. I think the Raiders are finally heading in the right direction. Look, if the McCoy thing winds up working out, this could be the steal of the draft. So, we'll find out how that plays out long term. I want to talk for a minute, more than a minute, about some of the potential round one draft picks next year. And this is my list, Ramona. My list is my list is basically 2 pages long. And I probably have, I don't know how many names on here, 50, maybe more, guys that I think are possible round one selections for next year. And, you know, and I think there are some Clemson guys in that mix. As of today, I think that on the Clemson front, as of today, I think Sammy Brown, Wesco, and Moore are all potential round one picks. I would be surprised if Brown, by the end of this year, is not a round one pick. Now, again, I'm sort of extrapolating that out and assuming that, you know, Brown takes another step forward and you know, plays to his full potential, and we see the full value that he brings to the football team. He's the leader of the defense, you know, that type of stuff. I think that, you know, and he's been coached up by Ben Boulware, which I think is just tremendous. And so, you know, this guy has all of the potential in the world to be a top 20 type pick in the next National Football League draft. And I would expect him to be that. I would be disappointed if he doesn't become that. I mean, you know, you saw the little, there was a little video out where he ran 4.40 and 4.41. Now, those are handheld times, just to be clear. Now, look, this guy doesn't need to explain his speed, all right? In high school, again, he ran a 10.7-something 100 meter. Even if, I can't remember if that was a wind aid at the time, but even if it was, he ran a bunch of 10.8s that weren't. So, you know, which was, again, significantly faster than your two-star wide receivers. And you're talking about a guy who's doing that at 235 pounds at the time, whatever he was. So his speed is legitimate, all right? Now, the 4.40 is not legitimate. Those are handheld times, and you make an adjustment. That adjustment's anywhere from like 0.16, 0.17. So, look, when he goes to the combine, he's probably running 4.5 something. You know, that's probably what he's going to run. And he's going to do it at, you know, 240 pounds. There's going to be a lot of demand for that. So that's right now I view him. I haven't seen him on any sort of round one projection. I've seen Will Held on a number of round one projections because we live in a world full of sheep and they all copy the same thing. I think Will Held's a really good football player. I don't think he's going in round one. I think top 100, yes. Round one, I don't think so. Because I don't think he has enough fast twitch explosiveness as a pass rusher. I think he's a good, solid, every down defensive end who can set a hard edge and can give you a little pass rush too. But I don't think that equates to round one. I think it's sort of like the Ohio State guys from a year ago, like JTT, etc. I think he fits more in that mold. And so I think he goes in round two or round three. But I think Brown is a different cat athletically, and I would expect that to show out. So I think Brown is going in round one as long as he makes that decision. When we talk about potential round one guys for the next NFL draft, I think he has a possibility. Wesco obviously has to prove he's healthy. You know, we've talked about the Wesco clock thing. And by the way, we're going to talk about the whole country, not just the Clemson guys. I'm just, right now, I'm starting with that. We have this strange issue of Wesco's 100-meter times in high school, which just weren't great, and the contradiction with his 10-yard split that he's been timed at Clemson, which people tell me has been among the fastest ever tested. So, and he plays fast on the football field. So I don't know. He competed in multiple track events in high school. Maybe he just wasn't focused on the 100 meters. I'm just not sure. I don't know the answer to that. I'll be really interested to see what he runs eventually. Obviously, Moore's not going to run like Wesco, and we have to see what Moore runs. He's a bigger body wide receiver. Somebody wrote me like a week or two ago and said, you know, while I like him better than Mike Williams, I'm not ready to do that. Do I think he's potentially a better route runner than Mike Williams? Yeah, maybe. And when T.J. Moore came out, that was my Clemson comp. It was Mike Williams because I said, you know, a physical catch point guy. The distinction is Williams was bigger. Williams is bigger, stronger. He's bigger and stronger than everybody in the NFL, too. I mean, Mike Williams is truly a catch point freak. And he had enough speed to get on top of people, too. And I think Moore does as well. You know, we've talked about the specifics of Moore's route running before. But, you know, could he be in this conversation? Yeah. In Moore's case, it's all going to depend how he runs. I think obviously he needs to have a productive season, and then he would need to run better, maybe better than expected to reach a round one level. Round one's a pretty special level. It's not easily attained. And I think frequently people sort of overestimate guys in that regard. But I think that I think Brown certainly, if he decides to come out, he has a good, healthy season, he plays to the level that I expect him to play to, I view him as almost definite, and yet I see him appearing nowhere. I think Will Held is probably not a round one player. I think round two, round three is more likely. And I think Wesco and Moore are both a little bit in the wild card realm in terms of whether either could make round one. I think there's more to be seen for both guys in that regard. But they're part of my list, okay? Those guys are part of my list. They're all four of those guys are actually on my list. In terms of some other Clemson guys and draftability, we're moving outside of round one. This is a conversation I had with Kwok one day, but I think Elijah Thurman has a chance to be drafted if he has a good, healthy season and proves his versatility, which he has. I think Olsen Pat Henry. I think Christian Betancourt. I think Chris Johnson. I think Jahid Lawson. Will Held. Darian Mayo. I think this is a big year for Darian Mayo, but I think Mayo has the potential to be drafted. And I'm talking about in this draft. I think Vic Beaurley has the potential. I think Elliot Washington. I think Ashton Hampton. And I think Jerome Carter, because he's a ball hawk. I think all of those guys, including Wesco and Moore, from a Clemson standpoint, have a chance to be drafted in the next draft. Again, I'm not saying they're all going to be drafted. What I'm saying is this is the group of Clemson players as of now that I see having the potential to be drafted in the next draft. And the rest is up to them, you know, how they play this year and how productive they are and how much of a difference that they make. And some of these guys haven't done much yet, like Darian Mayo, but some of that's been about opportunity. I do think this, you know, just thinking ahead to this team, I think this is going to be the best group of edge rushers that Clemson has had in a while. Because, quite honestly, in recent years, it's been more like Clemson had one guy or one and a half guys. I mean, you know, we've seen, you know, Peter Woods have to play on the edge because of a lack of talent and depth out there at one point. And so there hasn't been any real fast twitch pass rush depth at all. I think this group that includes Will Held and Jahim Lawson and London Merritt and Darian Mayo, I think this group of four guys is the best group of four that Clemson has had in a while. Look, we've heard a lot, okay? We've heard a lot from assistant coaches in recent years about, you know, oh, we've got great depth there. We're fine. We're good. And it was obvious that there were a lot of Jags in that mix. There just were a lot of Jags. Not not special guys. And you need some depth in that position as well. And I mean playable depth. And I mean some pass rush ability. I think, again, when you look at held Lawson, I thought Lawson was, quite honestly, in terms of production per play, I thought Lawson was better than Parker last year. You know, now he's got to be on the field, but I think held Lawson, London Merritt, and Darian Mayo is the best group of four defensive ends that Clemson has had in some period of time. I think that all four of those guys can play. I think all four of them have the potential ability to affect the quarterback, and you have some legitimate depth there, not just placeholders, not just run stuffers, guys that are a little more versatile than that. So when we talk about next year's Clemson team, and one of the areas I'm sort of optimistic about, I'm pretty optimistic about the edge rush group, the edge rush room, particularly those four guys. All right, we'll take a quick break. Walt Tiptula, Road Rage. Oh, before we do any of that, let me tell you about my friends at Yoder's. Established in 1986 by the Yoder family, this family-owned business is based in Fairplay, that's South Carolina, with a mission to be the most helpful building supply in the region. Yoder's offers a spacious showroom, knowledgeable and friendly staff, extensive selection of high-quality product lines. By the way, Ramona, would you say that Yoder's is in Fairplay or Fairplay is in Yoder's? That's how big they are, people. That's how great they are. The company caters to professional contractors, ensuring access to top-tier materials for various building needs. Their departments include building materials, lumber, roofing, siding, windows, doors, masonry, hardware, tools, and more. Engineered wood and truss manufacturing plant. Installed services, cabinets, stone, garage doors. This is Yoder's. Customers are encouraged to visit Yoder's showroom to explore options for your next building project. The staff is more than ready to assist with personalized service and expert advice. You've heard the unsolicited testimonials of people like Bengal John, who talked about, you know, he builds decks and he's a regular at Yoder's and talks about how incredible Yoder's is. That's who they are. Everyone knows that. And they've also, from a philanthropic standpoint, they've been incredibly active in that regard. They're also great people. 500 East Fairplay Boulevard, Fairplay, South Carolina, 864-972-3003, 864-972-3003. Whether you go, whether you call, tell them I sent you. That's how it works. Monday to Thursday, 7 to 5. Friday, 7 to 4:30. Saturday and Sunday, closed. It's Yoder's. Go Yoder's. You'll thank me later. Quick break.
At PhD Weight Loss, Dr. Ashley Lucas and her team, they treat unwanted weight as a symptom and not the main problem. And that's different from a lot of other things you might try. I saw that when I went to PhD. I was just looking.
I've seen a lot of Eastern Box Turtles crossing the road over the last 2 days. Please warn drivers to be careful and not to hit them. Yeah, exactly right. I'm afraid that, you know, there are some losers out there just intentionally try and do that. But, yeah, they can't harm you. They can't get out of your way of a moving vehicle. You know, if you have a chance, just take them off the road. And actually, in most of their range, they are protected now, too. So, yeah, like, do the right thing. You know, and you frequently will get them crossing roads after rainstorms come through in the morning sun, that type of thing. So, yeah, that's a good point. Thank you. Thank you. Texter said, Texter asked me about Tampa Bay's draft. I will get to that. But yeah, I'm optimistic about the Clemson defensive end picture. I think it's going to be the best that it's been in a while, and I think you're going to have some competition there, which I think is going to help, and I think people are going to be juiced up. I am optimistic about that group, and I don't really remember being all that optimistic about that group in the recent past. I mean, I think you had some hope going into this year that, you know, that Parker might really show out. Instead, he sort of did the opposite. From a Tampa draft standpoint, Reuben Bain falls to him. You know, short arms or not, you know, Tampa had a needed edge. Reuben Bain fell in their lap at 15. There's your answer that falls right to you. And I look, Is Reuben Bain going to be a great pass rusher in the National Football League? I don't know, but he's going to be a guy you can do a lot of different things with. I mean, you could slide him inside and rabbit package, rush him as a three-tech type and get some matchups against guards in pass rush situations. At the very least, he's going to set a hard edge. He's a physical guy. He plays hard. He's smart. He's a leader. There's a lot to like. Tampa drafted Trotter at pick 46. You know, look, here's what I said about Trotter before the draft and what I said on the show about him. I actually viewed Trotter as a top 60 player. I did not think anybody would take him in the top 60. I said I viewed him as that I really liked him. He's aggressive. He's downhill. There's a lot to like about Trotter. What worries me about Trotter is he has a yearly knee injury. And I kept him in the top 100, but I almost dumped him because I really thought that he might be a medical red flag and fall into the fourth round. So I was a little surprised by that. So I think that picks a bit of a reach based on the knee situation. If he's healthy, if he stays healthy, that's going to be a good pick. Then they drafted Ted Hurst at 84. I think that's about where I had him. He's the 6'4 speed receiver out of Georgia State. You know, he didn't look great at the Senior Bowl, but he has ability. There's no question about that. You know, you're just going to have to cultivate it a little. You're going to have to give him a little time. I really like the fourth-round pick, Keontae Scott, the cornerback from Miami. He's physical. He's athletic. There's nothing not to like. I love that pick. In round five, they selected DeMonte Capehart, which CBS spelled wrong, by the way. Because I'm looking at the team-by-team selections here. These aren't write-ups. These are just the list of players. Look, Capehart's a big athletic dude. If you can get production out of him, this could be a steal. I mean, he's definitely worth a shot. I really like the Billy Schroth pick at 160. He's an interior offensive lineman guard for Notre Dame. I just think he's a really good football player. I could see him starting for Tampa Bay, the other fifth-round pick. So I like that pick. And then Bauer Sharp, the tight end from LSU in a draft that we saw 22 tight ends drafted. He was one of the later ones. I'm not all that optimistic about that pick, but I don't hate it either. So there you have your Tampa review. You know, it's sort of a mixed bag. It depends how some of these guys work out. It depends if Trotter stays healthy. It depends if Hurst develops. Again, Bain fell in your lap. Keontae Scott was a good pick. I like both fifth-round picks. I like the Capehart and Billy Schroth picks. I think both of those are good picks. I could see both those guys eventually starting. Capehart might be one of those guys who has a better pro career than college career. He certainly has the athletic ability, the size, the strength to be that. He just needs to develop some consistent productivity. That did not really happen here. So that's, I think that's where we are. He texted, said, appreciate your thoughts. Thanks, Walt. Thank you. He said, always enjoy the show. Love Clemson football talk too. Thank you. Appreciate that. Mr. Bunny says, when you take turtles off the road, get them off the road face the way they were going. That's right. He's 100% right. He's 100% right.
That's an...
you know, it's...
That does make sense. Yeah, the poor thing. Well,
you know, it's funny when I saw a video of a policewoman today with that exact thing. She had taken a big turtle off the road.
Uh-huh.
And the turtle was going a particular direction. She just wanted it not to be hit by the cars were coming. So she stopped the cars and she picked the turtle up and she actually brought the turtle. The turtle sort of mid road headed left to right. Okay. For example, she moved it back to the left and was all happy. And as soon as she put it down, it scooted right back across the road. So she just waited and let it cross the whole road to get to the right where it originally wanted to go. It had a reason. It had a reason. Tess said, I know you're talking draft, but I'm curious, is Tristan Smith going to be eligible this year? I haven't seen anything on it. There's no update on the Tristan Smith situation. You know, he's sort of stuck in limbo, and it's impossible for me to know what the NCAA is going to do with any of these situations. I appreciate the question. I wish I could give you a good answer. But I'm afraid at this time there's not a good answer on it. So, what's this? What are you talking about? Crossroads after rain? Oh! A texter wrote in and said, "Tell people not to hit the box turtles, the eastern box turtles. They're crossing the road. You know, this kind of day right now after rain, you're gonna get those. So yeah." You can get in if you'd like, 654-7627, 654-7627. All right, in terms of other guys that I think are potential round one picks nationally for the next draft, again, these are in no order, and let's just start with some of the quarterbacks, okay? From a quarterback standpoint, I think you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I think you have as many as 8, maybe more, possible quarterbacks in round one, which is insane. Now, do I think all 8 are going to be round one? No. Could it be half that? Sure. I mean, it depends on them. It depends on how they play and, you know, and what their motivation is, what they want to do, too, as far as entering the draft. But their productivity, their health, all those things are going to factor into it. But just to go start with that group as potential round one picks, you have Trinidad Chambliss at Ole Miss. Some of his world changed. Some stayed the same. How that affects him, you know, we'll see. He's very Russell Wilson-like in my mind. He just has very little experience at this level, one season of football. I think he felt he needed another season. I think that's why he fought for it. I also think he wanted to secure his future in that way. He seems like a pretty intelligent guy. So I think he thought this all through. I think there was a reason he wanted to return to college and get better and make his way. But he's a bigger Russell Wilson to me. He's more athletic than Russell Wilson was, and Russell Wilson was very athletic. But he's about 6 feet tall. I think he has a similar skill set to Russell Wilson. If you ask me today where I think he would be drafted, I would think round two as of now. But that can all change. And I think he has the potential to be a round one pick. I think it would have been really interesting had he come out this season where he would have been chosen. I think at worst around two. And I think he would have been the next quarterback taken. I think Simpson still would have been taken first because of the Rams, because he had this connection to Snead. So Simpson was still going to go first because Snead had seemingly almost promised the family that he was going to draft their kid, which is, again, just a really strange situation. But you know, so that's how I see it. You know, with Trinidad Chambliss. We're going to get back to this conversation. I've got to take care of some business before we do any of that. Let me tell you about my guy, Nick Lavery. You know, listen, go see Nick. Nick is a salt-of-the-earth individual. Every year he makes massive donations in terms of sports memorabilia to the Tigers for Tatas campaign that I turn into big money. And he's just unbelievably generous with his time and his and who he is. But that's not the reason that you need him as your attorney. These things are. He's at 1011 Tiger Boulevard, Suite 500, right by Mellow Mushroom. If you need someone who knows the law and is going to be on your side, that's Nick Lavery, Clemson's local attorney. Nick will always help you. His office is, as I said, 1011 Tiger Boulevard. Nick's been serving our Clemson upstate community for more than 25 years. His areas of practice include DUI, been charged with DUI. It's a devastating event, can disrupt your entire life, can change your life. It doesn't mean you're guilty. It means you're going to have to go to court and face the charges. You're going to need a quality South Carolina DUI lawyer. That's Nick Lavery. Boat, car, motorcycle accident. Look, not that long ago, I was pretty badly injured in an accident. I did all the wrong things. seek medical attention if you need it, and call Nick Lavery. That's it. Don't speak to any insurance companies. Call Nick. Let Nick guide you through the challenges you're going to face. He will point you, he will steer you in the right direction. Wrongful death. If your family's facing the decision to file a wrongful death lawsuit, it's important to know exactly what you need, how to get what you deserve. Look, if your loved one dies due to the negligence of someone else, it's time for justice, and Nick will make sure you find justice. And finally, parenting is hard. Kids get in trouble. That's what we do as young people. We get in trouble. It doesn't mean they're a bad kid. It just means everybody needs a little help at times. Nick will help you. Nick and his legal team know all the best options to help defend and protect your child and their future. Whether it's DUI, minor in possession, public disorderly conduct, fake ID, Nick will help you and your child. For your free consultation, call 864-654-3680, 864-654-3680, or visit online, nicklaverylaw.com. You will 100% thank me later. Quick break.
Another warrior is your Lieutenant Governor Pamela Evatt.
The Knicks won, but Ananobi pulled a hammy, and that would be a major loss for the Knicks. I know Embiid didn't play. I think that's why the game was actually closer. It's that the Knicks, when a star player is out in the other team, somehow it affects you. It's hard to explain, but if you've ever played, you know what I'm talking about. And I don't think the Knicks played anything like they've played of late, but they still went up 2-0, and Philadelphia's in big trouble, and we don't know when Embiid's going to play. But from a Knicks standpoint, you know, they have this incredible chemistry going, and Ananobi's been a big part of that. They cannot afford to lose him with that hammy for any period of time. And I don't know what grade that I did not hear what grade that hammy injury is. You know, I think they're graded 1, 2, 3. One is like one is sort of insignificant. It's not a tear. I think 2 is like a slight tear. 3 is a complete tear. You know, and of course the issue with hammies are that you sort of can't rush it. It's just one of those things. So I don't know about his situation, and that would be a big loss for them. Meanwhile, again, the Spurs crushed the T-Wolves, as we mentioned earlier. This you see a lot of this in game two when the road team wins game one and they don't quite show up for game two, or they get behind. They cast their chips because they don't want to spend any more energy than they have to on a loss, you know, and they already achieved what they came for. So I think that was the T-Wolves case. Ant didn't play well at all. He was like a minus 33 in plus minus. You know who had the worst plus minus on the Spurs? Wembanyama again. Yeah, everybody else had a bet.
Did he try the threes again?
He did. He
just keeps doing the threes?
He went 2 of 7 from three-point range. So, again, he's still out there firing threes. So now in the two games of the series, he's 2 of 15 from three-point range. Your 8-foot-14 guy is 2 of 15 from three-point range in the two games of the series. That is not a recipe for winning the series. They got by with it last night because everybody played well, and they destroyed them, and they took their heart away early. Wembanyama did have 15 rebounds. Now, what's interesting is he only had 2 blocks, right? So we went from the 12 blocks to 2 blocks. How is that? Because the whole NBA was complaining that he was getting away with goaltending. And so, obviously, there was some sort of little crackdown on it, at least for game two. Like, stop letting him get away with this stuff. And so, I don't know. But that's how it played out. But, you know, Wembanyama, I think, had 17 points. 17? I think 17. So, you know, look, his whole team played well. But just in the plus minuses, I think he was a plus 5, which I think was the lowest number of certainly of any of their starters. I think most of their bench players too, which is sort of interesting. Game three, I think, is going to determine that series. And at some point, you're going to have to take the training wheels off Ant. And Ant's going to have to play a lot better than he played in game two. He did not play well. Like I said, I think he was a negative 33. I mean, I think of all the T-Wolf players, obviously all their numbers were bad. You lose by 50 or whatever they lost by. Your plus minuses individually all the way across the board are going to be bad. But the worst was Ant. Ant was, I think he was minus 33, which is not good. Not good. Jason said, no need to play him, especially when he was shooting bricks. Right. Oh, he said, I wanted Ant benched at halftime. He said, right. Well, you're 100% right. He was not playing well, and the team wasn't playing well. And, again, at some point you just sort of pull the plug on that, and you say, okay, we're good. We're good. And, you know, listen, here's the other thing. Like, it's my experience. Beating people by, 40, 50 points in the playoffs is not always a good thing because these are pros. And no one likes to be embarrassed.
Oh, you're saying they're going to come back.
And... yeah. I think the T-Wolves will win game three. But I think game three, you know, listen, that's probably going to decide the series. It basically, listen, go through the whole history in seven-game series, and game three is often the game that decides a series. When it's 1-1, it's a big tell. So I'm not breaking any news here. But I think in this particular case, given the way game two went, I think it's obviously vital that the T-Wolves have to have game two. I don't see how the T-Wolves win the game three. I don't see how the T-Wolves win the series without them winning game three. San Antonio could still win the series if they lose game three. They come back, get game four. They could still come back. I just, if the T-Wolves don't get game three, I don't see how they win the series. So we'll see how that plays out. But that's where we are right now. Texter said, I think running back will be an unexpected bright spot for Clemson. I believe that Jay Haynes will be the guy who emerges. His running style reminds me of Wayne Ellington, who was a star under Chad Morris. Thoughts? Yeah, and I don't see that. I think Jay is going to be the third guy, and I like Jay, but I don't see that. I think that Gideon Davidson is going to be the featured carrier on this team this year, and that's how I read it as of now. And I think that Chris Johnson's going to get a lot of work. I think Clemson's going to do a lot of different things with him. I would think that those two guys are going to get the lion's share of the work, and that Jay will be after that if he's, you know, a full go and fully healthy. But I think Gideon Davidson is still a special talent, and I don't think we've seen really what he can do. Look, Adam Randall was the featured ball carrier last year, and Gideon Davidson didn't get all that many chances. I thought he played better at the end of the year, and I think you'll see him emerge this year and become the player that he can be. I do think that the running back room has a chance to be pretty good, but there's some uncertainty there. There's some unknowns there. I want to see it play out. I do believe in Davidson. I do believe in Johnson. I do believe in a healthy Jay Haynes. I believe in those players. I just want to sort of see that play out. Whereas the defensive ends, I feel pretty good about. I feel pretty good about. Jason said, concerned with now because of how Io left the game with the heel soreness on the same leg he had soreness. Wonder if he might be shut down with free agency looming for him. He did not have his normal speed. Yeah, I don't know, but I think you proved in game one that you can play without him. And I'm not all that worried about that. And role players play better at home. You're not going to get any replication of what we saw in game two. I mean, game three is going to be a more competitive game. I think the T-Wolves find a way to win game three, but we shall see. We'll talk more about it. But I think that's where we are. You know, one thing, the Vassell corner jumper that he hit, I think it was a three, but the Vassell corner jumper he hit, I'm sure I've seen that before. I just don't know when. It's pretty unique. He jumped before he received the pass. He jumped into his shot motion before he received the pass, which is, I mean, if I've seen it, I haven't seen it often. And I'm just not even 100% sure. It was just a really unique situation. Now, his form was perfect. The pass was perfect. It didn't impact. It didn't force him to catch the ball left or right. It's the only way he could have done it. He needed the pass to be on target. So he jumps up in the air to go into his shot motion. He catches the ball while he's in his shot motion. And he hits the shot, which is just craziness. But that's what he did. And, you know, the reason for it was late in the shot clock. And so, you know, he was trying to get a shot off in time. But you talk about shot preparation. This guy was in thinking ahead. I mean, that's not a guy who's just playing well. That's a thinking man's player. But the execution of that was almost hard to believe. It was sort of indicative of the night that we had. Before I get back to the round one players, let me take care of some business first, and we'll get back to this. I want to talk about something that Clay Travis posted, which I think is worth a look. Let me tell you about Gilstrap Roofing. Gilstrap's been covering the upstate for four generations. They're the most experienced. They're the best ratings and reviews. Gilstrap Roofing is the upstate's go-to for quality roofs, storm damage, roof replacement, roof repair. They do it all. You're talking about working with the best. I mean, they've been doing roofs for over 90 years. You work with an experienced team of roofers who specialize in shingle roofs, metal roofs, flat roofs for residential, commercial, industrial customers. This is Gilstrap Roofing. They work alongside you and your insurance company to help streamline the claims process. If you're looking for a full-service roofing contractor with extensive experience who's fully licensed, bonded, and insured, look no further than Gilstrap Roofing, the Gilstrap difference. Serving the upstate since 1935, family-owned and operated across four generations, A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, fully licensed, bonded, and insured, a full-service roofing contractor, extensive experience with hail damage and wind damage claims, GAF Master Elite Certified, gives the option to upgrade your warranty. Like and follow Gilstrap Roofing on Facebook and Instagram for a chance to win their monthly giveaway. I promise you won't want to miss out. Call today, 864-269-1232, 864-269-1232. Tell them I sent you. Visit online, gilstrapproofing.com, gilstrapproofing.com. Did you see Clay Travis's tweet post about the University of Washington women's soccer team? They played a group of under 14 boys.
Why?
And they got woodshedded. And now, I've seen Travis post these same type of things before. I think he has multiple motivations. Look, I think if your motivation on this is to demonstrate appropriately that men should not be playing women's sports, if that's your motivation, then I think that's 100% legit motivation, and you should use these examples as evidence of how silly it is. If your motivation goes beyond that, and it's like to somehow sort of embarrass female athletes, and to me it seems like Travis has multiple motivations. Like there's a little extremism in this because he's always doing this. He's always taking shots at the WNBA and these type of things. It's sort of what he does by nature. And it leads to a bunch of responses, you know, like you would expect, of people saying that, because he also has $1 million standing offer for any WNBA team to play a state champion boys high school team. So he has another motivation. It's clear. He I don't know. He doesn't like women. I'm not sure what his deal is with that. But I think two things can be true. I think it can be true that because the response to this is that there's no WNBA team that can beat a JV boys team. See, I think you're full of crap, you know, and I think that's easy to say. And trust me, you know, you go out and play Paige Beckers or Caitlin Clark in horse, for example, they're going to destroy you. I mean, absolutely destroy you. You better be like Steph Curry because they're going to humiliate you. I mean, absolutely humiliate you're non-playing A. Now, if you're talking about playing full court and physicality and the advantage that male athletes have, that plays a part. But when you're talking best of the best, don't undervalue them. Be careful about that because the stuff about the JV team, it better be some super JV team. Even the state champion team. You know, tell me what state we're talking about. because there are a lot of states that aren't beating WNBA teams. Trust me, state champion boys teams. Walt Tiptoe, Road Rage, quick break.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson. WAHT AM 1560, Cowpens. 97.5, Spartanburg. We are the Roar.
Running a business means wearing multiple hats. So if you're like,